I'm not that far from dragging you out of the cart and beating you into dust.
You should work up to that. Kind of leaves you nowhere to go.
I can go to your mama's and start a small fire in her panties.
The Cutprint Film Podcast, episode number 49, Only Lives to Get Radical. Here are your hosts, Jeff, Dave, and Chris.
Ahoy, mateys. We're going to be sailing the seven seas of film on the Cutprint Film Podcast, episode 49. I'm your host, Captain David Costell.
I don't know where you're going with any of that, but I'm your first mate, Jeff Rollins.
And I'm your troubadour. Is that a thing? Chris Evangelista. That's a thing on a ship, right?
Sure, it
troubadour.
Sure is. You're either that or the cabin boy.
I was going to go with cabin boy.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to be that low down on the on the hierarchy of piracy.
You're chained to the oars.
Hey, what's this show about?
We're a film podcast.
I'm the anchor.
We talk about movies and everything related to movies. Today, we're going to be talking about Oscars and some movies that came out over the Valentine's Day weekend.
Hubba hubba.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to be doing our Kathryn Bigelow director series, episode one.
That's right.
Talking about Point Break. But first, we're going to get into the films that came out this weekend.
Right. So, Jeff, you saw a film. It's called Kingsman: The Secret Service.
Yeah, yes, why don't you hold court? And,
what a bad title that is.
Yeah, it's cumbersome. It's long. It's just it doesn't tell you anything about the film. It actually would turn people away if they didn't see this amazing trailer.
I thought it was Kingsman Secret Service you saw the movie and reviewed it.
I thought it was Ben Kingsley's Secret Service.
That would have been an interesting film.
Isn't he in the film, actually?
No. Nope.
Really? Is
no.
he like the one British person not in the film?
No, Michael Caine's in it.
Right. Mark Strong is in it. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Playing a bald person.
Yeah.
What king?
Colin Firth is in it.
What king is Colin Firth? Richard III?
I think you misunderstood what the film's about. This film is about
I believe he's Nat King Cole.
No, he's old King Cole. Colin Firth plays a secret agent who is part of this organization called the Kingsmen. It's this old secret spy organization that is funded by old money.
Oh. So slavery?
No.
Because that's what old money is.
Well, yeah, serfs. It's funded by money from the feudal system. And it's under no government jurisdiction.
That's
so
good.
Yeah.
That always leads to kind of like the NSA.
We're all about privateering.
Right.
We believe in private companies doing great things.
And rocketeering.
Yeah. Well, I could just blast off through the ceiling after hearing that joke.
So this film, it's directed by... directed by Matthew Vaughn, who directed X-Men First Class. He also directed Kick-Ass. So, yeah, I had reservations about this film simply because it's a Matthew Vaughn film. And it's also based upon a comic book by Mark Millar.
Yeah.
Or is it Millar?
I think it's Millar.
So, who also wrote Kick-Ass. And Mark Millar, he writes really – he has good ideas, but his – they're really juvenile, misogynistic, nasty bullshit.
He takes clever ideas and then makes them so – over the top and broad, dare I say, to the point where if you don't have any tolerance for this type of stuff, you're just going to leave. You're going to turn it off or you're going to walk out because it's an acquired taste. It definitely takes, you know.
What does it taste like?
Well, it doesn't taste like apples, so I just don't get
it. Matthew Vaughn's also a comic writer as well?
He actually co-wrote the comic for this film.
Okay.
I've heard that. How does this compare to Mark Millar, other adaptions, and Matthew Vaughn films? Like, is this better than Kick-Ass? Because I'm not a big fan of Kick-Ass.
Yeah, well, with Matthew Vaughn, you either love it or you hate it.
Right.
That doesn't ever tend to be much middle ground because of it's so polarizing. This the subject matter, the hyper-violence, the harsh language, which this doesn't really have a whole lot of.
And see, I like that stuff. I love hyper-violence in movies, but there's just something about Kick-Ass that just turned me off. I don't know what it – I liked Nick Cage in that. I liked his goofy performance.
Yeah, Nick Cage is great. Compared to Kick-Ass, this is a much more this appeals to – this will appeal to a wider audience.
Right.
It's less niche because there's no superheroes running around. It's more of a spy thriller. Mm-hmm. So any fans of James Bond films, specifically the Roger Moore era, where it's sort of like DC Silver Age, where everything is fucking insane.
Like Moonraker.
Yeah, yes, we're going to the moon.
the best Bond ever, you mean?
Well, yeah. I think some people would argue that.
For a long time, folks at home, Dave was convinced that the next Bond film, Spectre, was going to be a remake of Moonraker.
Yeah.
After he had his teeth replaced.
I was rooting for Moonraker.
Yeah. This is it's a silly movie. It's fun. There's more fun to this film than there is in Kick-Ass,
because
that's a very, very violent and very serious movie, even though it's
like
superheroes.
It's like a nasty movie, and it felt like nasty for the sake of being nasty.
This is not.
I think this is not nasty.
Is this rated R?
Yeah, it is rated R.
It's a hard R, I hear, too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The guttural R.
It's rated R for a lot of violence, but like I said, it's not as mean as the violence in Kick-Ass.
Do you see Colin Firth's piece?
No, you don't.
Oh, okay.
His hair piece, you mean, his toupee.
But Colin Firth is excellent in this. He's a great actor, and he's having a lot of fun. In fact, everybody's having a lot of fun in this. The main star, whose name escapes me.
The character's name is Eggsy, which bothers me.
Yeah, this is that actor's first real feature performance, and he is just a gallon of white paint. He is uninteresting.
Really?
He brings nothing to the role. It could be anybody up there, which is why I just can't be bothered to remember his name. Colin Firth is the star. Samuel L. Jackson also gives a great, great performance that is kind of an exaggerated version of his Mr. Glass villain in Unbreakable, where that is such a reserved and quiet, calculated madness, whereas in this film he plays the villain who is just out of his mind. He wears straight brim baseball caps.
Hey, what the fuck's with that character design? It's very weird.
Well, I wanted to ask about that. So I haven't seen the movie yet, so obviously I'm not going to know, and I'll see it eventually, but I'm wondering if there's sort of like a hint at subtle racism running through this film, because the actor's name is Taron Egerton, by the way.
Yeah.
When you see him in the trailers, at least, he's kind of ghettoed out, and same thing with Samuel L. Jackson's character. He's got this sort of generic ghetto-y sort of look to him, and I'm wondering if it's sort of like the moral of this film is like you have to be proper and British and white, and otherwise you're part of the problem.
There is sort of a salute to, you know, being up prim and proper.
Right.
There's a lot of gentleman odes in this, where some of the code words are no brogues and things like that, which is, you know, a reference to broguing on shoes. Dress shoes, so
yeah, but like,
sort of. I can't say that I think that this is intentionally demonizing.
I think it's tongue in cheek. Maybe,
yeah, I think so. I think it's kind of playing around with the idea of, you know, slobs versus snobs.
Right.
But Samuel L. Jackson dresses like that, but he is a billionaire. Actually, he's the richest person in the world in this film.
And in England, that like hip hop culture is mostly white people.
Is
like,
it?
Yeah, right. It's like that Essex, you know, West End thing they got going on. So that's in a lot of like British stuff where it's like white people, and it just seems weird to us.
A lot of the gadgets in this are fun. Mm-hmm. You know, harking back to the James Bond thing. There's a lot to take in visually, and there's some really great action sequences, but it's all CGI. So if you're not, you know, into that sort of thing,
that
then I can see how
bugs me a little.
I can personally see how anybody could not enjoy this movie.
Right.
I liked it though. I thought it was a good movie.
I mean, it's getting a lot of, I mean, I would say predominantly good reviews.
Yeah,
so.
It made over $40 million this weekend, which is great, which is really good for a February release.
Right.
But you know, not as good as the other movie that came out this weekend.
So obviously, the biggest film that came out this weekend is Paul Blart 2.
No, that's a misprint.
Oh, sorry.
This is one sheet. There's a misprint on the
sorry,
top.
Sorry, it was a future episode. It was actually 50 Shades of Grey, the adaptation of the big Twilight fanfic porn for moms that sold lots of copies in book form, and they made it a big movie.
Yep, make sure you flip that couch cushion.
So, yeah, none of us had gotten around to seeing it. We had our reviewer, Aubrey Nagel, saw it, and she did not give it a positive review.
No, Aubrey did not enjoy this film. Right. I think she gave it a 3 out of 10.
Yeah, which is horrible.
That's not a good rating, folks, you're keeping track.
It seems the general consensus is the film is better than the book, but it seems like you'd have to be not trying at all to pull that off.
Yeah, and that's not saying it. Nearly anything to say that the film is better than the book.
And it seems like most reviewers seem to be saying that Dakota Johnson is great. She does a really good job, but everyone else is kind of terrible. They're saying Jamie Dornan as Christian Grey is really bland and
just dead-eyed.
Yeah.
He's got shark eyes.
Right. And I downloaded a copy of the Danny Elfman soundtrack over the weekend.
How is that?
So yeah, it sounds like it's from a horror movie, so I don't understand what they're doing with this film. But that said, the film
Something's up with Gray. Something's up with Gray.
Yeah, it's repurposed Nightmare Before Christmas songs. So it made $158 million overseas, this film. And that's a lot of money.
And $90 million at home.
Right.
That's $240 million this film has made.
Is that a record-breaking February,
yeah. The previous film that held that record was actually The Passion of the Christ.
A much better movie from what I hear.
So that just goes to show people in February want to see movies about people getting the shit kicked out of them.
It's either sodomy or Jesus. And that's all we want.
So, I mean, in theory, this is a good thing because predominantly the people in charge of this movie were female. As a female director... So it's good because it's a good sign that shows, you know, female directors can deliver huge movies. I just hope.
And it's a female audience, right. Too, which it shows, you know, females will buy things, so let's market to them also. Right.
Like, as far as the 50 Shades book goes, I don't think I've ever met a single man who likes the book. I think it's only a female.
Besides audience. Jeff.
Yes.
I loved it.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. I read it back to front.
Oh, like the Torah.
Yes.
So, I mean, it's good, but I wish it were for, like, a better movie, just because, I mean, again, I haven't seen the movie yet, so maybe it's good, I don't know, but just the subject material doesn't lend itself to good.
It just seems uninteresting to me, personally, and yeah, this is a movie heavily marketed to women, particularly women over 30, I want to say.
Yeah. All the ladies I work with who are pretty much all over 30 were all hot and bothered to go see this on Fridays.
Yeah, this is a cultural type of phenomenon. Right. But
it's good. It's fucking shedding that puritanical bullshit
that we're
carrying around.
But I feel like if we're going to market movies specifically to women, could we market better movies? Could we make some better movies?
Yeah.
Like, I'll even say Magic Mike. That's a much better movie than this. That movie actually has charm to it.
And it's not even like the S&M angle. I'm all for a really...
No, this just seems cheap.
Yeah, I'm all for a really great S&M movie, just not this.
Absolutely.
Please. I'm talking, of course, about the Metallica album S&M.
Of course, naturally. That version of Master of Puppets, second to none, really.
Right. So do you guys think 50 Shades will win any Oscars? See, this is my transition right here.
I love that transition. Yes, I do. I think it'll take it all.
Speaking of Oscars, the Oscars are this upcoming weekend.
They are.
Right.
And I'll just let you know right now, this show will be one day late next week because we would like...
A day late and a dollar short.
No dollar short.
We're actually always a dollar short.
We're going to come to the table pockets stuffed with dollars.
But so they're Blart Bucks.
Yeah. we're going to watch the Oscars next Sunday instead of record this show and record the show the next day. So this show will be a day later.
I'll probably watch them on mute because, man, they're insufferable.
I might watch them on mute and then have 94WYSP do the commentary for me. I watch my football.
Are you going to watch the Brazilian stream again? Like you did last year?
No, absolutely not.
Oh, yeah.
Another thing I won't be doing is talking about that.
Yeah, it's actually a milestone. This will be our one-year anniversary for Cup and Film, because our very first episode, which you can't find anywhere, nor should you, was about the Oscars.
Yeah, and we are going to celebrate it by coating our nude bodies with lye.
Just getting graves we dug ourselves.
So tune in next week to episode 50.
Yeah.
50 Shades of Cut Print Film.
Yes, that's right. But in preparation, we're going to be giving our Oscar predictions for next week.
Right.
And we're going to do every category. starting with sound editing.
Oh,
guys,
this,
what do you think of this category?
This sounds tiresome.
Mick Foley.
No, of course, I'm just kidding, everyone. I wouldn't dare do that to our loyal listeners.
Yes, all four of them.
We're going to just be covering the main categories.
Right, like, and best foreign animated film.
Nope, I think you've misunderstood me. We're going to be doing Best Picture.
You want to start there?
That's anticlimactic. Best Director, Best Actor, and Best Actress.
What about supporting?
We
gonna do supporting
we yet? Can do that if right. you guys want. And we're going to be picking who we think is going to win and who we think should win.
Right. I have a feeling a lot of our picks are going to be similar. So let's see how this.
I do
out.
Too. Let's see how boring and dull we can make this. Right.
So do you want to start? So what do you think?
Let's start with.
Are we doing supporting or not? So
yeah, let's do supporting.
All right, so supporting actress, who do you guys think will win? Let's start with you, Jeff.
Let's go over the nominees.
Sure. I have them right here.
And the nominees are?
So best supporting actress are Patricia Arquette for Boyhood, Laura Dern for Wild, Keira Knightley for The Imitation Game, Emma Stone for Birdman, and Meryl Streep for Into the Woods, because, of course, Meryl Streep has to be nominated.
Okay. I didn't see Into the Woods.
Nor should you.
Into the Woods is the only movie on this like the top 20 categories that I didn't see.
And
it's not that good.
From what I hear, there's absolutely no reason Meryl Streep should even be nominated.
No,
I think
absolutely not.
Everybody's saying Emily Blunt.
She's great.
Should have been nominated.
Emily Blunt's great in it. Anna Kendrick's great in it. Meryl Streep is sort of just like, oh, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Meryl Streep is a great actress. No one's arguing that. But
what's her name from Gone Girl should be in this over Meryl Streep?
It's Carrie Coon.
Yes, yeah. She's not nominated at all, and she should be because she was excellent.
Okay, I'm gonna say, I have to go with Patricia Arquette
for both.
Okay. I think she should win, and I think she will win.
Right. Well, I'm gonna say Arquette will definitely win, and while I wouldn't have a problem with her winning, a part of me just wants Emma Stone to win for Birdman just because I think she was excellent in that movie. What about you, Dave?
I think I would give it to you. If there was anyone else on the list, I might give it to Keira Knightley for Imitation Game because she was the only good thing in that movie.
She was good in that.
She's the best part of that movie, but I don't think that she's better than Patricia Arquette was in Boyhood.
Right, or Emma Stone.
And Patricia Arquette's going to win it, hands down.
So. I'd even be happy with just Laura Dern winning just because I love Laura Dern, and it would just be cool for her to win. Because she's not as like a prominent actress as much as she used to be.
Wild's one of the few films I haven't seen.
It was good. I think it was great.
I heard Laura Dern's in it for 8 minutes total.
She's in it a bit more than that,
but,
I would say.
I mean, you know, that you can look at that both ways. It's either she shouldn't be on this list, or
she's so great
for those 8 minutes that she's earned.
Yeah, her presence is felt in the movie because it's cut throughout the whole thing.
Oh, okay.
The movie's not linear by any means.
Okay.
So
that makes a whole lot more sense then.
All right, so so let's go to a supporting actor. The nominees are this first one just makes me laugh out loud.
Dave Costa.
Well, that too. Robert Duvall for The Judge.
Oh, stop right there.
Ethan Hawke for Boyhood. Edward Norton for Birdman. Mark Ruffalo for Foxcatcher. J.K. Simmons, Whiplash. Jeff, take it away.
Okay.
No, literally, take this all away.
All right. Yeah. Well,
this sandwich. I'm done with it.
What do I look like, your busboy? All right. This is a fun category this year. I thought Mark Ruffalo was absolutely fantastic.
Right. These are all really good performances, except Robert Duvall, who's just done this a million times.
J.K. Simmons, show stealer in Whiplash. Edward Norton, again, show stealer in Birdman. Ethan Hawke. I'm not a big Ethan Hawke guy.
I'm a Hawkhead, and I would like to give it to Ethan Hawke for this, but the other performances are just so strong.
Yeah,
that it's
so who's going to win, Jeff?
I'm going to say I think J.K. Simmons has this locked. Yeah. I think he will win.
Absolutely.
And I'm not saying I don't think he should win, because I think this is one of the best performances of the year, leading or supporting actor. It doesn't matter what you want to call it. But I want to give it to Mark Ruffalo. For Foxcatcher, because I love a physical role, and I love it when an actor can play physicality without you even realizing he's doing it until the end of the film, and you think back and you're like, oh, that is how wrestlers walk.
Yeah.
That and just the way he plays that Dave Schultz character with that furrowed brow and that hunched walk, It's just, it's incredible, and you don't even know you're watching it while you're watching it until you think back later. And I think that is the mark of a great performance. So, yeah, I would love Mark Ruffalo to win Best Supporting Actor, but I think J.K. Simmons has it. And he deserves it. Yeah. J.K. Simmons does deserve it.
Mark Ruffalo kills in that role. Like, he conveys so much without even, with no, over-the-top bullshit. You, get how he's struggling with every decision he makes in that movie. Mm-hmm. And he's not in that movie a lot.
No, he's not.
Compared to how long it is.
It's similar to that Laura Dern.
I believe it's 10 hours long.
It is a long one. What about you?
I think, again, J.K. Simmons has this locked. And he's definitely – he's in my should win, although a part of me wishes they could give it to both him and Edward Norton, because I think Edward Norton – again, a lot of people have their reservations about Birdman, which I'll never understand, but I feel like at the very least you have to admit the acting in this is top notch. And Edward Norton is fantastic in this film. And it almost feels like it's like a comeback for Edward Norton, this film, more so than Michael Keaton, just because Edward Norton hasn't really been as prominent. Like, when Edward Norton first burst onto the scene with Primal Fear and Fight Club and stuff like that, everyone was just like, holy shit, this guy is a great actor. And then he just sort of dropped off the radar. And in Birdman, he's phenomenal. But at the same time, J.K. Simmons is so good in Whiplash.
And here's what you have with the two differences. The difference between those two actors is that J.K. Simmons is beloved in Hollywood, whereas Edward Norton is pretty much universally loathed.
Right,
his reputation precedes him. And the great thing about this performance is he's playing a version of himself.
Right, he's playing a jerk actor who's just a really good actor.
I love that performance. I love all three of those performances. Yeah. Edward Norton, Mark Ruffalo, and J.K. Simmons.
Right.
I think those are fantastic performances.
It was a really good year for supporting actors. So, I would say J.K. Simmons has this locked. Dave?
I agree with Jeff's picks, but the thing Edward Norton and J.K. Simmons have in common is without them, those movies aren't as good as they are.
That's true. Whiplash, even though I think Whiplash is really well directed, if J.K. Simmons was not in that film, I'd probably be like, well, that was all right, and I'd never want to see it again.
Yeah.
And same thing with Birdman.
Right.
Edward Norton, he keeps that energy that the film needs.
They're both exponentially less interesting films without those two pieces.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Oh, and Robert Duvall. No, I'm kidding.
No, we won't be discussing that.
Fuck the judge. And again, Robert Duvall, great actor, but no.
One of the greatest.
Yeah, but no. He's played the cranky old man a million times.
All right, so...
So let's move on to Best Actress.
All right. I would love to.
The nominees are Marion Cotillard, who was just announced to be in the Assassin's Creed movie for some reason, nominated for 2 Days, 1 Night. Felicity Jones for The Theory of Everything, Julianne Moore for Still Alice, Rosamund Pike for Gone Girl, and Reese Witherspoon for Wild.
Okay.
Jeff?
Like I said, I haven't seen Wild, so I can't even speak on that.
Have you seen Wild Things?
I have seen that.
Remember that threesome?
It is the least sexy threesome I think I've ever seen. And I haven't seen 2 Days, 1 Night. Those are both on my list of movies to see. I'll probably see them before the Oscars.
I haven't seen 2 Days, 1 Night either. That's the one film I haven't seen.
So going off the small pool of films in this category I have seen, I'm going to say I can't imagine Julianne Moore doesn't win this.
Absolutely.
And
she has it locked.
And that's also who I want to win.
Okay.
I just watched Still Alice this past week, and while the movie itself is great, it's a great movie. It's not the best movie that came out this year. Her performance is incredible.
Again, that's a film. Julianne Moore's not in that movie. It's not that good.
Without her. Anybody else, I'm less interested. But I did think there was some good direction in Still Alice, so that kind of kept my attention.
I mean, Still Alice bothered me because it's got some great acting in it. Julianne Moore's great in it, and odd enough, Kristen Stewart is actually really good in it. But the film itself, there's nothing to it. It's literally just
Alec Baldwin's pretty
good.
She's
losing her mind. I mean, but I think Alec Baldwin's always good.
He's consistent. Yeah. That doesn't
exist. But Still Alice is just she's losing her memory. That's it. There's nothing else to that movie.
I don't know. That movie's horrifying.
It is horrifying.
It is, but I mean, so is fucking Faces of Death. It doesn't make it a great movie.
And I want to say before we move on to Chris's pick, before I saw Still Alice this week, my pick for who should win this role and who would win was Rosamund Pike for Gone Girl. And that personally, that speaks to me about how great this Julianne Moore performance is. It's, right. It's just
– it's a game changer.
She just falls into the role and disappears into it.
Help her
it's
up.
Amazing. Here, Julianne, take my hand. So, surprise, it's just a fake glove. It's not really my hand.
Wow. That was elaborate. So yeah, Julianne Moore is going to win this. It's sort of just like – It's like she's earned it at this point. Yeah. Julianne Moore is a great actress in general.
How many nominations has she had?
8,000, I believe.
And she's won one.
So it's sort of just like, it's like a given, like, it's sort of like when Martin Scorsese won for The Departed, where The Departed's a good movie, but it's not his best.
It's no Coon Dune.
So Julianne Moore is going to win, and she did give a great performance, but I'm going to stick with my original pick and Jeff's original pick of Rosamund Pike for Gone Girl, where... Rosamund Pike was an actress I've was aware of, but I never was that like impressed with. Yeah. But in Gone Girl, she is phenomenal. That is like a career making performance in mm-hmm. my eyes. She's so good in that film, and it sort of angers me that film has just been sort of like left out of the awards conversation.
Pretty much
didn't get. That's the only nomination it got. Actually, it didn't get any other.
It should have got a best director.
It should have got a best adapted screenplay too,
and soundtrack.
If just, oh, yeah. yeah. Just, but no one, I guess people were just not as impressed with it as I was, but.
But I, to follow up on your point that you had never really seen anything that she was, seen her have a great performance like this before,
right.
I think that the Academy will, you know, be more open to nominating her in the future after
yeah.
this performance. I don't think Rosamund Pike's going to disappear.
I don't either. Just a part of me just wants her to so she's not she has no chance in hell of winning, but I just yeah. want her to have it just because it's such a good, dark, twisted, weird performance, and it's just
it is.
You know, it's,
yeah. There's a lot to it.
I agree. That's my pick for should win.
Should win. But who will win? Do you think it's going to be Julianne Moore?
I think it's going to be Reese Witherspoon.
See, you say this, I think you're wrong, and if you are
I
right,
think you're
I'll,
wrong too.
I'll buy you a Sunday at Friendly's. If
but
you're
if
right.
you're wrong, you'll have to get into this Iron Maiden.
I just know. I know those weird things that the Academy does, and this is one of them, where they love Reese Witherspoon, and she was great in this, and just the fact that she was great in it makes it even more obvious that they're going to want to give it to her, because
see, but,
she's one of them.
But
you know
I would
mean?
Counter that with Reese Witherspoon actually has an Oscar already. She won for Walk the Line.
I know, but what if she had two?
And but Julianne Moore has none, and Julianne Moore is... I'd say more respected even by the Academy
yeah.
than Reese Witherspoon. So I feel like it's going to be that like that quote unquote
yeah.
pity win.
But I don't think it's about respect. I think it's about the popularity of it.
I also think that Reese Witherspoon.
And I bet a lot of Academy voters would be surprised that Julianne Moore doesn't have one. They probably are just like, oh, she has 10 of them by
it
now.
It seems like it should
she's
be a
so,
given. But
yeah.
No, yeah.
I don't know. I think the campaign for Still Alice is there's a lot of money in the coffers.
Yeah,
that thing.
There hasn't been a lot of push for Reese Witherspoon as far as the campaigning goes. So
I can't imagine Julianne Moore loses this. But
let's put $40 on it right now. Seems like a good amount, right?
I don't 40, think
it's not
so.
Too
do
much.
You,
not
do
too
you owe someone $40? Is that what this is about?
Anyway,
I'll just lend it to you.
The best actor nominees are Steve Carell, Foxcatcher, Bradley Cooper, American Sniper, Benedict Cumberbatch, The Imitation Game, Michael Keaton, Birdman, and my favorite, Eddie Redmayne, star of Jupiter Ascending for The Theory of Everything.
Okay.
Jeff.
Winning. That was Eddie Redmayne.
I don't understand.
As Charlie Sheen.
Oh, okay. Still don't understand. I have no idea what the connection is, but.
There's none.
All right, so. I'm going to break this down. I think the Academy tends to favor...
bold, fortune, fit... No, I'm sorry.
They tend to favor fictional best acting Oscar performances. So I'm going to say...
Like when they gave it to Lincoln, Daniel Day-Lewis?
They gave it to actually Abraham Lincoln. They dug his bones up.
Not really where I was going with this. So... But because the category is so split between fiction and nonfiction, I think Benedict Cumberbatch and Eddie Redmayne are going to kind of split the vote with anybody that would typically vote for Brit-type films.
British geniuses roles.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, these are two sides of the same coin.
Pretty
so
much, yeah.
That vote is definitely getting split, so forget them. Steve Carell... Just forget him.
He should not be nominated for Best Actor.
Right.
Supporting actor, sure.
Yeah, he shouldn't. He's has no business being in this category. I think Michael Keaton should win it for Birdman because that is a fantastic, funny, desperate performance of a man flailing and putting it all on the line and having a sense of humor about it at the same time.
Yeah.
But I think Bradley Cooper is going to win this, and I believe me.
I just got a chill.
Believe me. I want to be wrong so, so badly.
I just felt like Ben Kenobi when that planet blew up. Just felt a dark disturbance in the Force.
I would absolutely love to be proven wrong, and I hope that I am, but I think that the Academy is going to stand up, salute the flag, and let an eagle fly off into the distance and give Bradley Cooper the best actor.
See, I feel
Oscar.
Like...
Bradley Booper?
No. I feel like... Earlier in the the campaign, Bradley Cooper might have won, but I feel like after all the controversy that popped up after the nomination, I feel like that sort of disqualified him.
I don't know. I think I'm sorry. I'm having trouble getting over the Bradley Booper thing.
And how could you not?
I think that controversy is just going to be fuel to the fire.
I think so.
Yeah.
I like how you broke it down. To use your own term, it makes sense. The vote splits on the English vote, English hero,
the English genius,
because
vote.
It's the English genius. Yeah. How many people are going to vote for one that much more than the other? It's going to be split.
The art crowd is going to go for Michael Keaton, but that domineering pop American crowd is. Gonna want Bradley Cooper
and,
again because he's one of them.
And the Academy loves Clint Eastwood; they love him.
They do, which is weird because I don't know
that fucking movie.
I don't know. I mean, for the record, I don't think Bradley Cooper is a bad actor, and I hear he's actually real. I haven't American Sniper is one of those films I haven't seen, and I don't think I ever will see because I just don't give a fuck. But I hear he's good in it. In theory, I mean, you know. But
it did nothing for me that performance.
I mean,
absolutely nothing for me.
Ideally, I think Eddie Redmayne is going to win just because it seems like that's where the tide is turning in general. At the same time, there's a chance Michael Keaton will just squeak in there because the Academy loves a big comeback performance.
Yeah.
You know,
yes, they do.
And so, again, as for should win, I would say out of this list, my pick would be for Keaton. But ideally, I think who should win is either Jake Gyllenhaal, who is not nominated for Nightcrawler, or Ralph Fiennes for Grand Budapest. Again, not nominated.
Either of those men could have taken the place of Steve Carell, who, again, no business being nominated
that,
in this
that
category.
That upsets me so much. And again,
get Robert Duvall out of supporting actor and put Steve Carell in that position.
Steve Carell's performance, good performance, has no business being considered the lead in that film.
No.
And that's a spot that easily could have went to Gyllenhaal or Fiennes. So those are my should wins, but they have no chance at all, literally.
Yeah, I mean, I would give it to Gyllenhaal for this. Yeah. This is his moment.
I cannot believe they did not nominate him. That is
fucking ridiculous.
That is shocking
to me. It's ponderous.
Especially with Benedict Cumberbatch in it. Ugh, okay, but I think Eddie Redmayne will win just because... He has the biggest campaign behind
the
him.
Biggest Huge. Mouth.
He does have an enormous set of chompers.
But same thing with Benedict Cumberbatch. So you're right. That vote is going to be split because those are equally big campaigns.
Yeah, again, this isn't a contest of merit. This is a contest where a group of people vote.
Yeah.
So that vote will be split, I think.
What did that billboard say? It was like, vote for the man who saved
honor the man, honor the film. Which
and
is
then a picture of Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yeah,
absolutely ridiculous.
Who are we honoring here?
All right, so who's your pick for should win?
That was Michael Keaton.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, and Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yeah.
Right. Well, he's not up for it.
So, best director.
Yeah.
Nominee.
He's a write-in.
How do you say his Inturo? Is that how you say his last name?
Inurito.
Alejandro Gonzalez Inurito.
Yes, that guy for Birdman. Richard Linklater for Boyhood. Bennett Miller for Foxcatcher. Wes Anderson for The Grand Budapest Hotel. And Mortimer Snerd for Imitation Game. That's not his real name, but I don't give a shit.
I believe that's a gaffe.
It's Morton Tildum.
That is a great name, by the way.
I don't know. I like Mortimer Snerd's a better name.
Well, he's a wonderful puppet.
So, Jeff, who will win? Who should win?
Okay.
For best director.
Bennett Miller is not even in contention for this.
Although that film is beautifully directed.
It is, but he will not win. He will not win.
He should not have been nominated.
I agree.
I'll argue with the two of you on that. Hmm. He should have been nominated.
You'll lose because I've got a gun.
And I also feel Foxcatcher should have been nominated for Best Picture.
You're wrong about that, too. Anyway, Jeff.
Morton Tildum, I don't think he has a chance. Alejandro Gonzalez.
Oh, why? Because that movie is a piece of shit?
Not a piece of shit.
No, didn't you love all those fucking stock footage shots of planes? Oh, my God.
So Alejandro Gonzalez and Iñárritu, I think, man, he might win. Maybe he has a chance because the Academy likes flashy direction, and right. That's all Birdman is.
Oh,
that,
yeah.
It's just a heavily directed film.
Has he won before?
No.
Mm-hmm. No.
But I'm going to say who I think should win is Wes Anderson for the Grand Budapest Hotel. Nice. I would do a backflip right off my couch.
Whoa. Can you record that? Vine it?
Vine it.
But I think who will win, it will be Richard Linklater for Boyhood. Yeah. I can't just imagine The Night Ends without him winning at least Best Director.
So, yeah. So I have a if and but situation in this. So I feel like at this point
F and but?
Yeah.
What? Ew.
Yeah, I have an F and but. So the main categories are down to Birdman and Boyhood at this point. Okay. So if
– Or Snerdman.
Yes. So if Boyhood wins Best Picture – they're going to give the Oscar to Iñárritu. So if Boyhood wins, they're going to give it to Iñárritu. If Birdman wins Best Picture, they're going to give it to Linklater. Okay. I think they're going to split the difference to try and make everyone happy.
Yep.
That's my will win.
Yeah, I agree. I do think this is going to be a year where it's not Director, Best Picture, right. one and the same. I think it's going to be split like whatever, they did with Argo.
Yeah, exactly. They're going to try and make everyone happy. But again, for should win, I'd agree with Jeff. I'd say Wes Anderson should win just because I would love for that to happen.
It'd be the best. Yeah. It would be wonderful because right. That's a movie the direction is – it's showy, it's flashy, right. Like Birdman, but it is not so obnoxiously flashy, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's a film where the direction is definitely a huge part of what makes it great.
Yes.
But it just kind of sinks into the background.
Wes Anderson deserves a fucking Oscar.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And
yeah.
This is the movie he deserves it for.
It's his great – I think it's his best movie.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. But at the same time, I think a lot of people think that about Linklater, too. They're just like, oh, it's his time to win.
Yeah, but this isn't Linklater's best movie, and that's...
What? What? Dave.
How dare you?
Dave, Boyhood is the best film of the last 20 years.
And I wouldn't even say that it's well-directed.
I'm calling the police. Hello, police? There's a man here who does not think Boyhood is the best.
Well, speaking of which... The Best Picture nominees.
Wait, well, so who is your should win?
Is
it Wes Anderson?
Yeah.
But
I don't know. I think he might win, but I'd say Linklater has a little bit of an edge over him on that one.
So, all right. So, Best Picture, the nominees are.
Well, there's 14 of them.
American Sniper, Birdman, Boyhood, Grand Budapest Hotel, Imitation Game, Selma, Theory of Everything, Whiplash.
Nightcrawler.
No.
Oh.
Sorry. No Nightcrawler. It did not get in there. That's
fuck.
It. Ends at Whiplash.
Okay.
So, Jeff.
All right. There's a lot of good movies on this list.
Yeah. All of them American Sniper.
No. That's not one of them.
Oh.
Not even close.
No.
I'm going to say... Well, what I want is Grand Budapest to win. That's who should win. I think that's the best movie. I know that's the best movie I saw this year.
Let's get this out of the way right now. Do we all want Grand Budapest to win Best Picture? Because that's going to be my should win.
Yes.
All right. Okay. So that's all our should wins. Who will win? Jeff Rollins.
I think in order to make up for their blunders, the Academy is going to give Best Picture to Selma in a shameless display to prove that they are not racist or overlooking any type of artistic merit or historical merit.
We didn't even fucking mention David Oyelowo.
Oyelowo.
Yeah, again, he's another one who Didn't get nominated. Yeah. Really should have been.
Right, and that's one of the blunders that I think the Academy is going to try and make up for by giving Selma the Best Picture trophy.
I could see that happening.
And I loved Selma. I thought that was a great movie.
It's a great movie. It's very good.
And I would have no problem with that winning Best Picture. It was one of the best films I saw all year.
It's better than Boyhood. Sorry, everyone, but it is.
It is,
in my opinion, possibly the third best movie on this list, behind Grand Budapest and Birdman. But again, I think that's going to take it, and I will not have a single problem with it if it does win.
Yeah, I mean, I could see that happening, but
unlike the people on Twitter after the awards happen.
Oh, boy. Hey, I'm going to deactivate my Twitter once that trophy's handed out.
Or racism, as I like to call it, instead of Twitter.
I could agree with Jeff in that I could see the Oscars trying to be like, oh, sorry, we are so racist. Let's give it this. But I think at this point it's going to either be Boyhood or Birdman. It's going to come down to those two. And at the start of the season, of Oscar season, I was 99% sure it was going to be Boyhood, but Birdman has been winning a lot of these like other awards, so it seems like maybe Birdman's going to squeak in there.
Yeah.
I think the winner of the Best Picture 2014, I don't know how that works.
It's 2014.
Because it's 2015
They
now.
Show them this year, but it's for later.
It's not like I know things about film or anything. I should know.
Yeah, you're new to this.
Will be the Grand Budapest Hotel.
Oh, you think it will? Yes. Wow. I would love for that to happen.
I would kiss you on the neck softly.
I think all this other bullshit going on with American Sniper, Imitation Games, and Theories of Everything, like that is detracting from.
It's like sour voters, you think?
I think it's dividing all the votes, all the controversy, and the one that will get the most consistent amount of votes will be the art house people who.
You're probably right.
This come is definitely. I can't remember an Oscar season that has ever been. So controversial as this one. It's been insane just how angry people are about these Oscars.
Grand Budapest just won the Writers Guild Award, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah, it shocked everybody.
I think it has a chance of winning Best Picture. The biggest chance, I hope.
It'd be wonderful. It'd be great.
I'm living in a dream world right now, but it's lovely here.
Maybe you should wake up and we should go to break.
Yes.
Here, now that we're 40 minutes into the show.
Let's go to this electric eel in your bed.
All right, we'll be back and we're going to talk about Point Break. Ah, come forth and let me tell you the tale of CutPrintFilm.com, a film review, editorial, and news website.
Have they got any loot there?
They do. Oh, I can't find it. Does anyone know where the loot is?
I have one right here.
CutPrint Film has a merry band of men.
Do they drop the beat?
Yes, they do! It includes More Like Radio, Joystick Jerks, and Anti-Fanboy.
Lemons, lemons, lemons.
Submitted for your approval.
Yeah, we're surfing.
Yeah, we're surfing right into this Catherine Bigelow director series.
Hank 10.
1991's Point Break.
Right, so the director series is a thing we do here on the podcast where we pick a director, we pick three films, and we talk about those three films over a series of three shows. And our newest pick is Catherine Bigelow. And we have a song, don't we?
Yes, we do. It goes a little something like this.
Me, 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 me.
It's the Cutprint Film Director Series. Action.
Directors!
Pass the popcorn. Put a piece in my mouth.
Yum. There it is.
That's right.
That tells you all you need to know, folks.
Yeah, that's all you need to know. So, as I do every week, and by every week I mean I just started doing this like two shows ago, if you have a director you want us to take on for the director series, shoot us an email, tweet us, whatever you want to do. So, here's a brief bio.
James Franco, perchance.
No, if you do that, I'll hunt you down.
That's right. You not only will your IP address be banned, but we will also have a bounty on your head.
Yes, we'll hire Dog the Bounty Hunter. Is he still around? I don't know.
Who knows?
All right, so here's a brief bio of Catherine Bigelow. Hopefully, I stumble over every word like a goofus.
I hope not.
All right. Catherine Bigelow's small but impressive body of work has consistently dealt with issues of violence and tension. Originally trained as a painter, she made her first feature film with 1982's The Loveless. Later, teaming up with her frequent writing partner, Eric Red, she made the vampire western Near Dark and the crime drama Blue Steel. After the success of 1991's Point Break, she gained more attention in 1995 for Strange Days, which she based on a story by her then-husband, director James Cameron. After the unsuccessful K-19 The Widowmaker, starring Harrison Ford with a terrible Russian accent, in 2002, Bigelow took a six-year hiatus, then returned to filmmaking in 2009 with The Hurt Locker, a project that earned her her most overwhelmingly positive notices of her career. She went on to win Best Director for that film, making her the first and so far only woman in filmmaking history to ever win the award. Her most recent film was 2012's Zero Dark Thirty.
Which is a great film,
yes.
too.
And we will be watching that
film. Our final Bigelow film.
Yes. So, yeah, Kathryn Bigelow, we said this last episode, but I picked her because I wanted to do a woman director, and I wanted to do a director that had a fairly lengthy body of work.
Right.
And because of the way Hollywood works, that has not really been a possibility up until lately. So because she started in the 80s, that gives us enough films to work with.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that she is the only female director to ever win Best Director – That's insane.
It is insane. And it happened fairly recently,
that's
2009.
Depressing. Yeah. That is depressing.
Isn't she two of the three times a female
lady?
Has been nominated?
She's once, twice, three times a lady.
Absolutely, Chris.
Well, no, a woman has only been nominated three times, and she's two of them,
yeah.
right?
That's shocking. I mean, this year alone, the director of Selma should have been nominated.
50% of the population. Over the last 86 years, they've been nominated three times for Best Director.
That's
you
insane.
Kidding?
Insane.
My goodness. Ugh. Okay.
So, but there's no problem?
No, not at all.
Not at all. It's yeah.
I think things are just ducky.
Well, the problem is men. I mean, men don't get enough stuff.
Exactly.
Meninists. By the way, if you consider yourself a meninist, light yourself on fire.
And unsubscribe to this very show.
Cut your wrists, then light yourself on fire. I want you to die painfully.
We don't want any.
Jesus. All right. Anyway.
So, Point Break came out in 1991, and it starts Keanu Reeves, Patrick Swayze, Gary Busey.
Wow, and he's so coherent in this film.
Yes,
I was shocked.
It's stunning. And Lori Petty, yes. who you may have seen in Free Willy and Tank Girl.
Right. It was nice to see her in this.
It absolutely
I kind of miss
was.
Lori Petty.
Me too. Yeah. Me too. So Point Break, if you have been living without cable
yes.
for the last 25 years and don't know what it's about.
Yeah, if you're unaware of pop culture at all, the plot is...
This is about Johnny Utah, who played by Keanu Reeves, who goes undercover to investigate a series of bank robberies in which the robberies are carried out by these men dressed as ex-presidents, Richard Nixon, Ronald Reagan, Lyndon B. Johnson, Jimmy Carter, and what was the other one?
I think that's it. I think it's Jimmy Carter's the last one.
And it turns out that these bank robbers are a gang of surfers who go up and down the coast following the waves,
yes.
the bodacious waves.
Yeah.
And
they only live to get radical.
That's how I live my life. I grip it and rip it. So Gary Busey plays the older, wiser cop
right.
to Johnny Utah's young whippersnapper.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty much it.
Well, Johnny Utah has to go undercover as a surfer. He learns to be a surfer.
Yeah, from Lori Petty.
Right, and he sort of gets addicted to this junky adrenaline lifestyle.
He goes deep undercover as Johnny Utah.
Yes.
Yeah.
For yes. the record, let me just say Johnny Utah is one of my favorite character names in film history.
It's next to Rayford Steele.
It's so good.
Johnny Utah from Ohio.
Yes.
Don't have to be confused with the state Utah.
So, yeah, Patrick Swayze plays the leader of this group of surf bank robbers.
His name is Bodie.
Douchebags, yes, you mean.
Yeah, surf DBs.
Yes.
We like to keep it clean, Dave. And he is sort of this guru, this...
he's like a Zen surfing bank robber,
yeah,
basically.
He has this lifestyle where, you know, he gives this anti-authority type
right.
speech on the beach. And these guys just like to live on the edge. They like to seek out thrills. And the bigger the thrill, the better.
Yeah.
And
not a bad lifestyle, really.
No,
I
it's
mean,
really
yeah.
not. It's how we live.
Yeah, that's right. See you at the beach later.
I'll be working on my editorial.
It's 15 degrees.
So, yeah, that's the basic plot synopsis
right,
for this film.
So, I'm afraid to ask, but what did you guys think of Point Break?
All right.
Jeff, take it away.
Initially, the first half hour, I was not loving this film.
Okay.
Because I'll get it right out in the open. This Keanu Reeves performance is the pits.
He's so fucking bad in this movie.
I will counter by saying I think this is one of his best performances.
He's unbearable.
Because he's supposed to be this guy. That's what he's... He was born to play this role.
No.
There's lines where he just is...
It's like, his line ratings that stink.
I mean, yeah, all right. Go on. I don't want to interrupt. Go on.
And I'm a Keanu Reeves fan. I will champion Keanu Reeves.
I love Keanu Reeves. Even when he's terrible, I love him.
Agreed. I liked Bill and Ted. Both of them.
Have you seen John Wick yet?
Not yet.
Oh, please watch it. It's so good.
I was going to watch it after this podcast, actually. I like Keanu Reeves, but he is horrendous in this film. His line readings are so... out in outer space that I can't make sense of what he was going for, and I don't know why Kathryn Bigelow even let this happen, because she's a hell of a director, and I don't know what was going on.
Instead, they went through Broderick, Johnny Depp, Val Kilmer, and Charlie Sheen.
See, I don't know.
Before getting to Keanu Reeves,
it's not a great performance, but I feel like
it's not even a good performance.
I feel like this is the performance this character needs. He's supposed to be this young, sort of dim-witted, hotshot FBI agent who just becomes a surfer. And when I think of that, I'm thinking, like, Keanu Reeves, that's perfect.
You're being way more lenient than I'm going to be.
All right.
But that's honestly, that is the only thing that I don't like about this movie.
All right.
It's so fun. All right, and
yes.
I'm so happy. All the other actors surrounding Keanu Reeves are so good.
Patrick Swayze is excellent in this.
Yeah, that's the thing. You said the first half hour, once the Swayzmeister shows up, this thing bumps up to another level.
He's the real star of the film.
Yeah, well, I mean, Gary Busey is wonderful in this, too.
He is.
And he helps out in that first half hour because he's almost immediately introduced, and he helps to lend some, like, okay, here's how you act, kid. Let me take the reins when I'm on screen.
But then that kind of, like, shifts in the end, weirds me out.
So, and I was going to say... It's like you said, when Patrick Swayze is introduced into the film, then things get really, really good. But Lori Petty is introduced almost immediately before Patrick Swayze, and I'd say things start getting really good right there. Because
she's great.
She's a great actress, and Patrick Swayze was a great actor, and Gary Busey was a great actor in this film.
It's easy to forget that because he's a lunatic now.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's not to make fun of him. He has legit brain damage because he was in a motorcycle accident,
right? So
without a helmet,
those actors elevate this movie in spite of the Keanu Reeves performance. And I also want to give commendations to John C. McKinley,
yes,
because he does a wonderful job of taking this cliche angry police chief and just going off the rails with it. He's just having so much fun.
He's a great character.
Yeah, he's always good.
So he was fun to have on screen too. So aside from Keanu Reeves' horrendous performance, I love every other actor in this except for those two boob cops
that
stink. They're ancillary characters.
Yeah.
But the actual star of this film is the direction.
Yes.
This is a beautifully directed film from start to finish. There's a lot of Kathryn Bigelow trademarks. There's that one nighttime surfing scene in particular that you saw hints of that in Near Dark.
Right.
There's a lot of great sunset and sunrise scenes in Near Dark, and that's what this reminded me of. And there's a lot of tense action scenes.
Oh, this film has some of the best action in like action film history. There's a chase scene in this film. It's on foot. It's fucking phenomenal. Basically,
and it's so long.
To do this scene, they took a Steadicam, they stripped it down to like its bare bones, and basically the cameraman was literally running, and he didn't really have a viewfinder, so he couldn't really even tell if what he was filming was in frame. So it was just sort of like
There was no mark to hit.
No, it was literally just the cameraman running after actors who were running, and it's such a great chase scene. It's tight.
I like that scene because it does things that other movies don't do, like he turns around and locks the door instead of like goofily keeping running and stuff like that.
It's as realistic as you're gonna get for a chase scene in a film.
Yeah.
And there's a skydiving sequence, which I love this sequence. There's actually two skydiving sequences, but it's great because a lot of the actors are doing their own stunts, and it shows. Like, Patrick Swayze, I read about this, he did 55 skydiving scenes for this film. Like he jumped out of a plane 55 times for Point Break, because Patrick Swayze was a big like athlete. He just loved athleticism.
As is Keanu Reeves.
Right.
They're both natural athletes.
Right. So there's the skydiving. The first skydive is really graceful and beautiful. And then the second one is my favorite because it's insane, where Keanu Reeves, he's so badly wants to get Patrick Swayze. He jumps out of a plane without a parachute and lands on his back. And
it's incredible.
It's great.
The action in this film is some of the best action I've ever seen. And the fact that it all takes place in this goofy surf heist film was shocking.
But it never feels like a cheesy action movie.
Right?
No, no, it doesn't.
The one thing I love the most about this movie is it. In theory, it's fucking ridiculous. It's the most goofy plot.
It sounds so stupid. When I was reading that plot, I thought, boy, does this sound brain dead.
It even is stupid. Like, there's no effort to keep his cover. He's doing things he shouldn't be doing, like going into FBI bus where people who are in the surf community would recognize him. It's like all the things you would never do as an FBI agent.
At the same time, I think what makes the film work is that everyone is playing this 100% straight. Bigelow's direction is playing it straight. The actors are playing it. They're taking a film about surfing bank robbers very seriously, and that's what makes. I feel like if this had just been an inch more tongue in cheek, it wouldn't work. It would just be like, they blew it by making it too goofy.
Yeah,
and I think that's what I love about this film.
You're right, and it's like you said last night when I was watching this, I texted both of you and said I don't like this movie because I had just started it. And you made the point that the crazier the plot gets, the more straight everybody plays it. And that's so true, and that makes the movie so much better, because when we start off, it is so like Keanu Reeves is just being a goofball when we start this film off.
Oh, man, I love that opening scene where he's needlessly at the shooting gallery in the rain.
They're doing target practice in the rain.
He's the only one, which just all on his own.
But yeah, as things go off the rails plot wise, everything starts tightening up performance wise, and it makes the movie so unique in that sense.
It's such a character driven action movie, which they don't really, especially at this time, they didn't really make a lot of those movies.
Yeah, my other complaint, and I say this is probably my only other complaint, is that the makers of this film, I don't know if they have never been to any coast on the planet and didn't know how surfers behave, but
yeah, it's very movie surfer.
Nobody acts like this.
Yeah.
Nobody behaves like this.
They literally say brah a lot instead of bro.
They say radical all the time. Yeah. They go to a party and there's a guy blowing fire at the party.
It's like they're going to Burning Man.
There's a man named Warchild.
Oh, that's my favorite line in the film, where Patrick Swayze says, "Back off, Warchild. I mean it."
It is like they made up this subculture that doesn't really exist for the movie.
And it honestly comes off as like, oh, I think this is how it is. So we're going to do it
this way.
At the same
time, I kind of love that, because like, I don't give a fuck about real surfers. I don't care how they really act. I'd rather watch this version.
Yeah, just like a little legitimacy sometimes.
I guess.
You know?
I know.
Yeah. I mean, even though we're talking about a movie where a guy can actually defy the laws of physics and catch up to people skydiving.
Or a man turns a gas pump into a flamethrower.
Oh, I forgot.
Man, I love that. I love the way that looked.
And just won't stop.
No, he loves it. He loves it. So let's talk about the heists, because that's some of the craziest scenes in the film.
I was actually – the heist, it shocked me at how influential they are, because – there's the very first heist we see, Patrick Swayze's character, he's wearing the Ronald Reagan mask. I love that, too, because this film was set 2 years after Ronald Reagan was out of office, which is insane. Like, imagine if a film came out, like, 2 years from now and fucking Barack Obama – there's a guy with a Barack Obama mask robbing a bank. Yeah. That would be shocking. But – so he jumps up on the cashier, the teller desk, and every bank robbery movie after this has that scene. Yep. Michael Mann's Heat has it. Michael Mann's Public Enemies has it.
It's very influenced.
The Town.
The Place Beyond the Pines has it. It's just like it's
The Dark Knight.
Yeah, it's all that. And then like I can't remember a film before this that features it. And it's like, oh, this film sort of just set that in motion.
It's this heavily choreographed heist and it's so stylish. Everything about this film is stylish. But
I forgot completely about the town. How the town, the film, the town, they're all wearing masks, like stylized masks. No real bank robbers do that. No. And this film sort of put that into motion.
And these masks are heavily stylized. The mouths move.
Yeah.
Like when Swayze is talking.
Rock and roll.
Like the mouth moves.
I was thinking about that. Like they had to have animatronic.
It's probably just a tight mask. The tighter the mask is.
Those masks are like, have you ever worn one of them? They're barely
floppy
on your face.
Yeah. So, and that just goes into the direction, this Catherine Bigelow direction.
Right.
It's fantastic.
It's
a surf heist movie. Boy, did this have a great director behind it.
It almost like them wearing masks like that, it almost instantly gives this film like a pop culture sort of.
Mm-hmm. Instantly.
It instantly inserts it, like, because it's like, oh, you're instantly going to remember that. They're wearing president masks because they rob a bank.
The masks also help to hold up the strongest thing the film has going, which is those like subversive themes of anti-materialism.
Yeah, it's all about anti-establishment.
Because
at the start of the film, Johnny Utah, he's entranced in the establishment. He's an FBI agent. He graduated from law school. He's really like sort of buttoned down. Mm-hmm. And then as the film progresses, he becomes more and more of this, you know, surfing adrenaline bro kind of guy.
Right, and even his plan to get Lori Petty's character to teach him how to surf,
right. He
looks her up in the database, the FBI database, and sees that her parents died. And he goes into the surf shop where she works, and he tells her this story, like, my parents died.
Yeah, which is kind of a dick thing to do.
It is a dick thing to do, but even that. Like the story he gives her is that he did all this stuff for his parents,
right.
And you kind of get maybe that is an act. There's some truth to that,
right? And there's the very first scene where Gary Busey tells him about, you know, I want you to go out and cover as a surfer. Keanu Reeves is just like, can I just walk around with a surfboard? Like, he has no he has no intention of becoming this guy, and it's sort of like the film is about him progressing into something bad, I guess.
Yeah, and this movie does a lot of. Subverting cliches,
right?
It does it with the buddy cop cliche, mm-hmm. where, you know, in Lethal Weapon, Mel Gibson is like the wild young man, but in this film the wild guy is the older grizzly cop,
right,
who also happens to be the smart one.
Yes.
Whereas the button down guy is the new guy, the new whippersnapper, Johnny Utah, and I thought that was fun. And I also like the fact that they get along almost immediately.
I love that.
They're not fighting. They're actual partners. And,
right.
And you expect them to butt heads throughout the whole movie, but they don't.
Yeah.
The other cliche is Lori Petty being the one who's training him instead of, like, the woman's the one who knows what's going on.
Yeah.
That's, you know, something that movies like this usually don't
do. That,
Especially back in like the 90s, that's like unheard of.
Another cliche would have been because they reveal that Lori Petty's character had been in a relationship with Bodie, the Swayze character. You think that they're going to butt heads over her.
Yeah,
no,
like a love
they
triangle.
Don't. There's no love triangle.
Doesn't matter. Yeah.
They bring it up and then it's immediately squashed. And I loved that.
I did too. Because, that's. I had seen this before, and even when I hadn't watched it in a few years, and rewatching it, I had forgotten that that doesn't happen. And I was like, that's so refreshing that they don't go into that at all.
Yeah. Catherine Bigelow is really good at just building up what you something you think you know where it's going to go and just wiping it off the table and going somewhere completely else.
It's great. So my biggest takeaway in rewatching this a few nights ago – is that the core of this film is really the relationship between Keanu Reeves and Patrick Swayze, and I realized it might seem outlandish, but I compare this relationship as like a goofy sort of mirror image of the relationship between Joaquin Phoenix and Philip Seymour Hoffman in The Master. It's that they're basically in love and they can't really do anything about that.
Yeah.
It's a dangerous relationship, just like as in The Master, whereas Philip Seymour Hoffman is constantly drawn to Joaquin Phoenix's, like, mixing him these dangerous potions and stuff like that. Keanu Reeves' character is drawn to just this, like, junky adrenaline lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And, like, that's, like, the booze for him. The turpentine booze is jumping out of planes and robbing banks.
And even in the final scene when Keanu confronts Bodie on the beach, he says, "You still surfing?" And he tells him, "Every day."
Yeah.
And it's just – that's a very telling scene because
and it's again, it's almost like the master again, where they just meet up again and then they part ways. And
yeah.
Well, that comparison makes my head want to explode like a David Cronenberg character. No, I'm just kidding. That's actually very interesting. Like, I like that deconstruction a lot.
As I thought of it, I was like, this is ridiculous. This is a ridiculous thought, but I was like, it sort of makes
even
sense.
Like that,
I don't think it is ridiculous.
The China scene in The Master, it has like the same coloring as the last scene in Point Break, where it's like that gray.
And there's right before Patrick Swayze jumps out of the plane at the end, he's like, I know you want me so bad, it's like acid in your mouth. And that's sort of just like... That to me, and like, you know, you could take it as, oh, he wants him as in he wants to arrest him, but I really think it is like an almost romantic relationship, and that's what The Master is too. It's two guys who are in love with each other but don't have any way to
Way to verbalize.
Yeah, they can't vocalize that love, and that's what this film is too.
And
that's
when Philip Seymour Hoffman surfs away at the end,
he puts on his Ronald Reagan mask.
Yeah, and I mean, this was a big thing in the 80s with, you know, macho. No, not cocaine.
Well, that was a big thing. Yeah.
Enormous. It went over like gangbusters. but the macho action film was big. And I mean, they get those types of films, this one included, get accused of a lot of homoeroticism. But I don't think it's a homosexual thing. I think it's a platonic love.
Yeah,
it's like we're saying there is, at least then, there was no way to verbalize
it. It's a love that's deeper than sexual. Yeah. It's like a in your bones sort of love.
Yeah, it's cool. It's sort of this kinetic energy that they have.
They need each other, but they're destructive together.
Yeah, they're not even like different ends of a spectrum. They're on the same spectrum. Like Johnny Utah is becoming this Bodhi character.
Because even this relationship, not only does it change the Johnny Utah character, it also changes Bodhi. Because at the start of the film, when Gary Busey is telling Johnny Utah about the bank. I think it's been like 30 bank robberies. Yeah. He says no one's ever gotten hurt. There's never actually been any violence. Yeah. But the minute Johnny Utah gets in, like he blows his cover and he reveals he's an FBI agent, and they do that one last heist, Patrick Swayze ends up like killing people. And he also, until that time, he's never said like, let's go to the vault, and he does it for this heist.
Yeah,
and
they go sort of, like, to the vault. They get greedy.
So like they equally destruct each other, basically.
Yeah.
It's kind of awesome that before this, action movies, because like now our favorite movies are movies like Nightcrawler, where they're action, but they're character driven action, and it seems like it took a woman to come along and be like, calm down, boys, like we need to make real movies at the same time.
It's an emotional action movie. Yeah. Like other action movies, especially from this time, they have no fucking.
Well, they're
room
brainless.
Yeah, they have no room for emotion. It's all brawn.
You have Commando.
Right. And those movies are great. It's, you know, for quote unquote great.
Yeah.
But this movie, it's not afraid to have characters have feelings. You know?
And I just love that a woman came in and made everyone else look like utter assholes. Yeah. Because it seems like movies change after
this. Well, she's a phenomenal action director. And so is her ex-husband, James Cameron.
Right.
And the interesting thing between them is Cameron, his action films are all female leads. And Bigelow's action films are all male leads.
Right.
That is
Jesus Christ.
A really interesting
cool
parallel. And the fact that they were married, I don't know if they were bouncing ideas off one another. You have to assume
they're probably kissing a lot.
I would imagine.
I don't know, Dave. Do you have any sources for this?
Ooh. Okay. Well, that's completely that thought's gone.
I don't want Snopes.com coming after us.
I like you. You were just talking about how Patrick Swayze's character changes after.
Right.
I like how he his coolness turns into like a psychotic angle.
Yeah, because
that scene where they're in the van together, you kind of realize he's all like craziness.
He's coming unhinged, basically. Yeah. Because like at the start of the movie, he's totally in control, and he's just like, you know, I don't like violence. And then by the end of the movie, he's blowing people away.
Yeah, and what you're referencing is once Johnny Utah's cover is blown, Bodhi has this Lori Petty character kidnapped and held hostage so that to force Johnny Utah to participate in their last bank heist so that she's not murdered.
And that's an upsetting scene.
Very upsetting.
Like
you don't see it coming at all because the tone of the film is, you know, a little silly prior to that.
It happens immediately after this big – I love this whole sequence because basically this is the way it breaks down. Johnny Utah, he blows his cover because he stumbles upon the ex-president robbing a bank.
Yeah.
So Johnny Utah knows his cover is blown. The ex-presidents know Johnny Utah is an FBI agent, but they all go skydiving together.
Yeah.
And Johnny Utah, he's so addicted to this thing, he's like, I'll do it. And after they skydive, Johnny Utah is fucking like laughing his ass off. He's like, he feels this brotherly connection. Yeah. And immediately after that, Patrick Swayze is like, BTW,
yeah.
I kidnapped.
And I think that
it was like a two-pronged plan. Like, let's show him the way,
yeah.
And in case we need
here's
this.
Here's the insurance policy. And then Bodie plays him the tape of Lori Petty, you know, at gunpoint.
Yeah.
So aside from the male-male love interest and the subverting expectations, what else did you guys like about this film? Aside from, you know, the performances, we talked about how great all these character actors are.
I just love that ending. I love how, and again, it's a total movie thing.
Oh, it blew.
No way
it
would
ever.
A real thing play out like this. But I love that early in the film, Patrick Swayze has this line where he's like, there's a 50-year storm coming. He's like, every half century, the ocean shows us how small we are. And you think it's just like this stupid throwaway line, but it comes back at the end where there's this insane storm and there's these waves. I don't even know how they fucking did this, but there's these giant waves. And I love that. So Keanu Reeves finally tracks Patrick Swayze down. And I love that not only does he track him down, but he gives an explanation of how he did it.
Yeah.
In like a lesser movie that would just be like, I found you, but Henry, he has this huge speech where he's like, I went to Mexico, and he explains.
Well, first he says, what's up, bruh?
Yes. And then he explains exactly how he did it. I love that because, again, that's like, you wouldn't expect that in a film like this. But
and he's so obsessed. He followed him around the world.
Right. He needs, and like, again, none of the other characters in the movie at this point, they don't matter anymore. Everyone else is dead. The only person alive still is Lori Petty's character, and clearly Keanu Reeves, even though they embrace after they get together, clearly he doesn't really care about her anymore. No.
He's evolving
so
into this. He wants Bodhi so bad, and he wants to become him, essentially.
Exactly.
So yeah, he they get into a fist fight.
They're in Australia,
on the beach in Australia, and he manages to cuff Bodhi during a fist fight, yeah. And the police come, and the man with the worst fake Australian accent appears. We'll get him when he comes in.
Hey, mate. You let him go. Yeah, so Patrick Swayze's like, all right, I'll let you arrest me, but let me catch one last wave, man.
Yeah, and this is obviously the 50-year storm we were talking about. And Johnny Utah knows this, so he lets Bodhi go.
And he knows Bodhi's going to die, and that's what happens.
And he wins still.
Yeah.
Like, Utah wins one way or the other.
I don't know how they... I don't know how they filmed that guy surfing in that giant wave.
Either.
Like, a part of me thinks they just killed a stuntman to get that.
I hope that was just a rubber doll.
Because it's a guy surfing this huge wave, and then the wave crashes on him. And it's man, how'd they do that?
It looked like they kind of cut images of a guy surfing a medium-sized wave in with cuts of the huge wave.
It's so well done because such good directing.
The direction, again, and this film is shot so beautifully. For a goofy surf heist movie, it looks incredible.
So, I think the biggest takeaway from this film is just that it's a really smart, stupid movie. And it takes skill to do that. I feel like any other director directing this, even a marginally good director, wouldn't have pulled this off as well as Catherine Bigelow.
No, it needs that Catherine Bigelow direction just to make it a good movie because... Right. Without her, this is just an okay movie at best. Even with all the good character actor performances, this Keanu Reeves central character is not good. This is a poor, poor Keanu Reeves performance. His line readings, again, are so bad.
I agree to disagree.
Oh, man.
Well, speaking of really great performances, how did everyone what did everyone think of Anthony Kiedis from Red Hot Chili Peppers showing up briefly? He had the Predator's haircut.
If you have one braided rat tail, it's okay. But two? My goodness, this is a powerful performance.
I think he had three, actually. He had like two on the sides, one in the back.
It's beautiful. A glorious performance. I
believe he's playing himself in this film.
He is. He's scatting and what have you.
I love that. That's actually an action set piece we didn't talk about. There's this huge standoff scene.
Because
at first, Johnny Utah thinks this gang of asshole surfers...
They're Nazis.
Yeah, he thinks they're the ex-presidents. I love that too. I love that, like, it's sort of like a twist that, oh, by the way, Bodhi's-
yeah, when he sees those cheeks, he knows right away.
Yes, there's a naked woman in the house that they have a standoff with a SWAT team,
right?
And there, it turns out that they were a methamphetamine ring with semi-automatic weapons
they have
in the house.
They have a closet full of guns. Yeah. So Anthony Kiedis, he's rocking out on the bed, as Dave pointed out, Jeff does when he's at home.
Yeah, well, a little-known fact for our listeners, I love to throw on a set of headphones and just kick and punch my bed in the morning.
Shorts and sneakers, but no shirt. Mm-mm. Listening to headphones.
You don't need a shirt when you have a core like this.
Just pounding those sheets, rocking out. So...
So they're remaking this, right?
Oh, please don't. But yes, they are.
Who's playing the abs?
I'm not thrilled about that, but I was thinking while watching this that they keep making like these FX series like Fargo and 12 Monkeys. I think that's on Sci-Fi. This could make a really good show like Sons of Anarchy, where it's Keanu Reeves' character in with that group of surfers.
I would say that I could see that. There's no reason to remake this as a movie, but if they did it as like a TV show and did it differently, sure.
Yeah.
But I'm dreading this movie remake.
If you were going to remake this as a movie, I would be very excited to see Kathryn Bigelow directed now, because it could be amazing.
Her bigger clout and her learned skills.
Yeah, her new style, right, which is vastly different than this. Yeah. I would say
the thing I'm dreading about this remake, one of the things I love about the original Point Break is that how sunny it is. It's the most sunny heist film I've ever seen. Like the scenes where Keanu Reeves is learning to surf, it's gorgeous. Like you see the sun coming through the waves, and I can just in my head now I can just see how quote unquote gritty they're gonna make this remake, where it's gonna be like
not
cloudy all the time, even though they're surfing,
and it's gonna look like The Town.
Yeah, basically.
And every one of those cliches you were talking about them not putting in the movie, they're gonna throw them right back into the remake.
Yeah, they have no idea what they're doing.
Like, I wonder if they're even gonna keep that ex-president theme, and if they are, is it gonna be more recent president? Is it gonna be like,
boy, how stupid?
It's gonna
that
be like
be?
George W. Bush. Is he gonna be?
It's gonna be two masks. Ugh. Two guys will be George W. Bush for both terms. Stupid.
And no one good. Ray Winstone is the only actor in the remake I like. Gerard Butler was originally announced, but he's not in it anymore, apparently.
He must be busy eating treats.
Who's Ray Winstone playing?
It doesn't say. I can only person
I can
assume
him as
is
Bodhi.
He's playing Gary Busey's teeth.
I would say the only person I could see him playing is the Gary Busey character of the older cop, because Ray Winstone is a chubby British actor.
Yeah.
I can't
He's playing Angelo Pappas. Who's that?
That's Gary Busey's character.
Nice cameo by Tom Sizemore in this. He plays the undercover agent.
Yeah, I like that.
I like that scene a lot.
I like that because the fact that it was Tom Sizemore made it feel like he was a character in another movie that just accidentally ended up in Point Break.
Like, that's what I mean about the show. Like, it seemed like it had these elements existing, like,
it built
like
its
that
own,
little
like,
gang.
Universe. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, right. I want to see the spinoff Tom Sizemore undercover cop movie. Where
you think I like this hair?
My wife makes me sleep at a Ramada Inn.
Yeah.
Yeah, this was a fun movie. It was a good movie. It's not one of the best I've ever seen. It's certainly not one of the best we've done in our director series.
And it's not even the best Kathryn Bigelow movie.
Not even close. But this is, like I said, it builds on the fun and the beauty of Near Dark, and it's a sign of things to come for stuff like The Hurt Locker and Zero Dark 30 with her big action sequences, because Kathryn Bigelow is a director that knows how to film tension.
Yes, absolutely.
And intensity.
The Hurt Locker, I'm not the hugest fan of that, but that movie had some of the most tense scenes I've ever seen in my life. Watching that in the theater, I felt like I was having a panic attack.
Yeah.
It was
and
so
she's
tense.
Great at that. She is just a natural-born action director.
Right.
And I'm excited for next week's.
Which is Strange Days.
Yes. Yeah. Which is not one of her best films, but it's definitely interesting. I just have one final – it's a fun fact about Point Break.
Oh.
So there's a thing – I don't know if you guys are familiar.
Patrick Swayze's dead. Yeah, all know that?
That's an
unfun
fact.
It's the prequel to Ghost.
There's a thing. It's called Point Break Live. It's a traveling play performance. And the gimmick is every night they do the play, the Keanu Reeves character – is played by a random member of the audience. They pick someone at the audience, and then they make him or her read cue cards.
That makes
so
much
shitty
sense.
And the joke is that Keanu Reeves' performance is so quote unquote bad in this movie that the best way to recreate it is with an unprepared, unrehearsed actor.
FBI agent.
Oh, why am I so bad on the phone? I can't get my feelings out.
Yeah, he's reading lines as though he is auditioning for a commercial.
I don't know. It didn't bother me at all. And I have an editorial popping up on Cutprint Film this week about Point Break, where I highlight that I think Keanu Reeves' performance in this is not that bad. All so right. look out for it.
Maybe you'll change some minds.
I probably won't, but who cares?
Well, that's the goal, though.
Yes.
So you guys want to recommend some movies?
Hell yeah, I said.
Okay. Oh
my God! I couldn't breathe.
You can bet your bottom dollar we'll be revisiting this one.
Holy shit!
We have new ones every week now. We don't ever revisit them.
Oh, I feel bad that I drowned that out because I could not breathe. I was dying.
That was incredible, Dave.
Holy shit!
Good work.
You got to listen to it on your own when you get home.
Who was that? Was that Co Steel? Nice. Nice work. Who's going first?
You want to go?
I just hope we don't have the same movie.
No, we don't.
That happened last week.
I can guarantee we don't.
Right. Go ahead, Dave. You go first.
So this is a movie I watched this week that I thoroughly enjoyed.
Okay.
It's 2014's I, Origins, directed by Mike Cahill.
Cahill.
All
right.
I don't know how to say words Cahill. Or names. Cahill?
It's Cahill.
Okay.
It's actually Smith. I'm looking right now.
He also directed that movie, Another Earth.
Okay.
With Britt Marling?
Yeah, and I enjoyed this so much that I watched that and did not enjoy that.
Okay.
So he's grown as a director.
That's good.
Britt Marling was the star of Another Earth. She's also a supporting actress in this. She's great in this. The star of this is Michael Pitt, who we
Dave's
all know and
crush.
Love.
He's your Bodhi.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You want to become him.
You want him so bad, it's like acid in your mouth.
I can't stop chasing him. So it follows this PhD student who's obsessed with eyes. It's like his what he studies in science. But it just has these broader themes of like what happens after you die. And but it's tackled from a non-spiritual angle, which I kind of really liked.
Right.
And it never definitively settles on anything. But the plot is really cool, where this guy develops a technology that reads irises, mm-hmm. and Michael Pitt's character ends up having a child. And when they scan the baby's eyes, it's this new technology. An error pops up, and it has a match of a different person. So then they realize that person had died right before their child was born, so it kind of follows like
reincarnations.
Yeah, kind of like that.
Interesting.
That's what they're getting at, and then Michael Pitt's character tackles that from like a scientific. It's cool. I liked it. The movie is filmed really well. It's done in like an indie style because that's what Mike Cahill
Mike Smith
is known for. But it's really cool. It takes place in New York City, so there's a lot of that like. Like what I liked last week about Shame is in this too, where it's Michael Pitt just looking awesome on the subway.
Okay.
All right,
nice.
So that's
I Origins.
Yeah,
2014. Right?
Yeah, 2014.
Last year,
I Origins.
Back off, war child. Seriously.
There it is.
So glad you used that.
All right, I'll go.
I'll go for it.
All right, my pick is fitting with our Oscar predictions. It is a 1988 film that won Best Foreign Language Picture. It's called Cinema Paradiso.
Ah.
Have you seen this?
I do not like this movie.
Okay. I can understand why. it is definitely not for everyone, but this is a movie that is about the love of movies.
Which I'm all for, but something about it didn't.
Okay, understood.
I haven't seen it in a long time, so.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably not going to be any better the second okay. time than all it right. was the first time.
Is this the one that they suggest, like, was brought up when Hugo came out a lot, that it was?
It's like a love letter to the movies.
I remember seeing that.
And it's about this boy named Toto. It takes place in post-war Italy. In this small village where there's the only thing to do is to go to the Cinema Paradiso and watch movies, where the chaplain has removed all scenes of kissing from the films. And this boy Toto forms a relationship with the projectionist, who back then this was an art form, being a projectionist. And he learns the trade and he learns to love movies, and he falls in love with a girl, and it's just a really – I think it's a beautiful film about the love of movies. It has one of the best endings I've ever seen, in my opinion. Chris might disagree. I thought it was a very poetic ending.
I can't even remember how it ends.
Oh, it's a great ending.
The only thing I remember with this movie is there's a scene where – there's some movie playing and people in the front row are comically jerking off.
Yes, there's a masturbation in a movie theater, yeah. And it's played off as though, oh, boys will be boys.
Right, yeah.
They sure will, won't they?
I will.
So yeah, that's my pick. 1998, Cinema Paradiso.
All right.
Back off, War Child, seriously.
Chris?
I never get tired of that. So last week, New York Times journalist David Carr passed away. And it was a big thing all over our Twitter feed. And I was familiar with David Carr, but I'm ashamed to say I was not overly familiar with it. I had read one or two things by him. I was familiar with a book he wrote called Night of the Gun. But everyone on our Twitter feed was just, you know, going nuts about how tragic it was that he died. And someone mentioned that he's a big part of a documentary called Page One Inside the New York Times from 2011. So I tracked this film down on it's on Amazon Prime. It's streaming, and I watched it, and it was really good. And he's not the main focus of the film, but he's a big part of it. And the film is basically about the New York Times living in an age where print journalism is pretty much dying, and they have to contend with online journalism and all this stuff, and they also have to contend with their reputation fading a little bit because.
They've made some boo-boos.
Yeah, one of the reporters was a big champion of the Iraq War before it started, and that sort of tarnished their reputation a lot. And the film – I wouldn't say it's a great film because the film is very much biased for the New York Times. Like the moral of the film is the New York Times is the best fucking thing in the world.
Buy it.
Yeah, if you don't agree, you're a silly goose. But it's – I have a big sort of hard-on for films about journalists. When I – my first – 2 years of college, which I didn't graduate, where I studied journalism, and I just love films about journalism. Like, two of my favorite movies of all time are Zodiac and All the President's Men, and I just love that culture of just like old school journalists in the writer's room, and they're just hashing out the story, and
yeah,
just something about
that's why The Wire is so great.
Yeah,
too.
it's like a romantic sort of thing to me, and there's a lot of that in this film. David Carr, seeing him in this film, I totally get why he was so beloved, because he's just great to watch. He's sort of like this cantankerous sort of guy, but he's also really open to like the new technology. He doesn't shun it.
Yeah.
But there's a great scene early in the film where he goes to interview the people who run Vice. And at the time this film was made, Vice was not as respected as it is now. And basically what's the guy's name from Vice?
Shane Smith.
So Shane Smith, he's talking about a story he's doing about, I forget.
Liberia.
And he throws the New York Times under the bus, and he's sort of like, our story is more important. And David Carr interrupts him, and he's like, you know, before you put on a fucking safari helmet and went to Liberia, you know, New York Times has been reporting about this stuff for, you know, 100 years. So why don't you stop, you know? And so Shane Smith is like, well, you know, like I said, I'm not a reporter. And David Carr cuts him off, and he's like, yeah, obviously. And and you can see everyone in Vice just look mortified and just feel
it's
like –
it's all on camera, and just the contempt in his voice is just a thing to behold.
And I just love that scene because, you know, I don't think Vice is the worst thing in the world, but I also feel like it's just great to see them just put in their place just a little bit, you know, and –
But now they're all billionaires.
Yeah, so yeah, joke's on me. They're fucking, you know. But, you know, it's a really, I'm not going to say fun, but it's a well-made documentary. It flows really well. I wish it had been a little bit more in-depth, but it's good for what it is. So
what's it called?
Page One, Inside the New York Times from 2011.
All right.
Well,
no.
That does it, folks.
There's snow out there on the ground, everybody, so
put
try
a fork
to stay
in
warm.
Us. We're done. Coming up next week, next to nothing. There's not much good coming out in theaters this week. Hot Tub Time Machine 2 farts into theaters. We will have a review for that. Hopefully somebody shits in the hot tub. I don't know. I won't be seeing it.
Spoilers. The Duff comes out.
We won't. I don't believe we will have a review for The Duff. We all passed on that.
Yeah, no Duff for us.
McFarland USA comes out. I believe we'll be having a review for that.
Oh, It Follows comes out. That's gotten a lot of buzz. It's an indie horror film. I'm one of the few people who did not love it to death.
But we do have a review, yes. And it will be posted this week.
What We Do in the Shadows came out last week, and everybody should see that movie because it's fucking funny.
Jeff didn't like it as much as you, Dave.
We'll have to arm wrestle with our left hands over that one.
That's my second recommendation.
Second recommendation. That's not a segment, and it won't ever be a segment.
We'll be editing that out of the show.
Yeah.
So our next week, I don't know if we'll be using are we going to use any of the director series at all, or is it all Oscars?
I think we might be going all Oscars all night long.
Holy crap.
All Oscars all the time. All
right, so strap on your bow tie and your strap on. We're going to be talking about the Oscars. And,
put on your rip-off tuxedo.
Yes, we'll all be wearing tux speedos. That's right.
Nice. And we're going to be walking down this red carpet that we put right in the studio.
Like lunatics.
It's going to be a black tie gala down here in our studio. So, tune in to cutprintfilm.com every single day. We have new stuff going up. Chris has his article about Point Break posting tomorrow.
I hope you read it. You probably won't, but I hope you do.
And all those reviews that I already mentioned. You can also check us out on Twitter at CutPrintFilm. We tweet all day long. Sometimes we tweet jokes. Sometimes we tweet reviews. Sometimes we tweet nudies.
Sometimes Dave tweets and then it gets deleted.
We delete it quickly because it's embarrassing. And but we encourage you to tweet at us. Just give us some feedback. And we also encourage you to go to iTunes and give us a rating.
Yes.
Jeff always says 5-star rating. I'll take what we can get.
No, I'm still going to say 5-star. Even 4-star if your only complaint is that we're all too handsome.
We've been getting a lot of feedback.
Guilty as charged.
We've been getting a lot of good feedback,
yes,
and we love it. Just keep it coming.
Yeah, please do.
We feed off it.
We do. We're literally eating bowls of feedback. It's not nourishing at all, though. We're wasting away.
Also, feel free to check out joystickjerks.com, antifanboy.com, and More Like Radio.
See you next week. Nothing? You guys aren't going to say anything after that?
No, I think we've run out of jokes.
Okay.
Don't forget to live radical.